Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. Once again, we're the doctors in the house. We have Aaron Keck with us, a celebrity from WCHL.
Do I count as a celebrity?
You do count as a celebrity because you get celebrity parking. You get the celebrity rate on all of your donuts and coffee that are available here at the station.
That's true. I do get the celebrity rate on that. I don't get celebrity parking, though. Employees have to park in the back.
You know, I believe that's true. I bet you're getting a workout compared to where you used to work. You know, I mean, it was just a hop, skip, and a jump
right in.
Walk
right in, yeah.
Yeah, boy, what a bummer. So sorry for you. It's WCHL's affordable fitness program.
That's true, yes.
It's the AFP.
I get my 45 steps in between the car and in the office.
Yes, and what you need
and
to do.
And another 45 on the way back,
well,
by the way.
Well, you need to plan to forget something in the car.
Oh, yeah, that'll
and leave
work.
It there, and that way you can.
I do that another 50 times, and I'm healthy.
That's right. Yeah. Unemployed because you didn't show
unemployed,
up for work.
But healthy. Yeah.
Yeah, but healthy. So speaking of healthy, those of us who are about to lose our health care are encouraged this week to see. Now, perhaps by the time we air,
I was going to say we're pre-recording this prior to the House vote, so
right.
we're walking on the ragged edge of disaster.
I'm not sure.
Making any predictions.
I'm going to tell you, I don't think we are going to be prior to the House vote.
Okay.
I think the House vote is going to find itself an emergency and not happen this week.
And regardless of
what
happens,
we'll be on the record. We'll see.
Well, you'll be on the record. I'm not predicting anything at all about the House, but it's before the Senate vote, so we're still sort of hanging in limbo on healthcare there.
Now, if you were a House member, and you had the, what is it called now, the American Hardly Affordable Care Act?
Yes.
Or whatever.
American Health Care Act.
Yeah, the American
like
Health Care Act or some such.
ACHA.
they
should call it ACHU.
They
American,
should have called it.
Yeah.
So that would be
American,
the Americans Caring About Their Health only. I don't know what it would be.
Yeah.
We'll have to come up with that
we'll
and post it to the website. We'll be tweeting about this all week. I'm quite confident at Gene Bulldog and at Aaron
at
Keck.
Aaron
is
Keck.
It, is it that simple?
I'm really not on Twitter, but yes,
yeah,
at Aaron
really
Keck.
Not,
I managed to get at Aaron Keck before all of the other Aaron
before
Kecks
anybody
did, and
else
now I don't even
it.
Use it
and
at
you're
all,
like,
which is great.
Yeah, I just have it because
just hanging
it's
on
mine.
To it in case
just,
I want to run for something someday.
That's right.
Yeah,
well, in case somebody else wants to run
ooh,
for something.
All the oh, yeah, I can sell it.
And just pretend that they're you. You know, like the guy who does the, I don't know who does all these accounts, but there are many Twitter accounts that are the names of characters from the West Wing, and they tweet regularly.
Nice.
And it's quite adorable. It's a wonderful way to keep the series alive, including, you know, Leo McGarry on that show. The actor John Spencer, of course, died
passed
just before
away.
The end of the before the end of the series. And so his Twitter account is called at Leo McGarry's Ghost.
Nice.
which is, you know, so he can really
I'm
say anything
I'm glad they thought
he
ahead
wants.
As far as
yeah, they
that
really
goes.
Planned
yeah.
ahead since they, I don't think they had Twitter at the
yeah.
time West Wing was on. But anyway.
Okay, healthcare.
What were we saying? Healthcare. If you were a Republican in the House of Representatives right now, even if you supported this bill, would you vote for that bill this week knowing it's going to go and die a miserable death in the Senate? It is dead when it gets there.
If I were a if we're just talking political strategy
just
here,
political strategy.
If I were a House member knowing that it would die in the Senate, I would probably vote yes because if in that circumstance I am supporting Donald Trump, which and say what
See,
you will,
yeah, well.
Say what you will about Donald Trump right now. The sort of the he's the lifeblood of the Republican Party. He is the person who's got more sort of active support. And if I'm concerned about Election Day 2018, I don't want to anger the Trump supporters a lot more than I don't want to anger everyone else because they're the ones who are going to come out and vote for me. So I want to support the president in this case. And voting for the healthcare package that Trump supports is a double win for me as a Republican in the House if I think it's going to die in the Senate because then
say I did my part.
I get to support the president and I don't have to deal with the fallout
with no
of this
penalty.
Thing actually passing and 24
right.
million people losing their health insurance, which is apparently what would happen if it did pass.
Well,
so
now
I think the bigger concern for Republicans in the House is if they pass it and then it actually does pass the Senate and 24 million Americans do lose their health insurance and now – you have to own that.
Yeah.
That is, I think, that might be the worst case scenario for a
Republican. I think that's political suicide. Yeah. But I will tell you respectfully exactly why you're wrong.
Okay.
Because Donald Trump's supporters, supporters, voters, however we're describing that, are the very people who are going to get killed by that law if it became law,
yes.
And they are becoming increasingly aware of how, and of course, remember now that they are hearing about this law being described as Paul Ryan's healthcare plan.
Yeah.
There's a picture of Paul Ryan holding up that document.
That's true.
For the cameras. That's true. You haven't seen that picture with Donald Trump, have you?
No, but I've gotten a lot of tweets from Donald Trump in favor of it. So.
I know he won't leave you alone. Yeah. I can understand that.
Trump really wants to own this healthcare
plan. Yeah, but he won't allow for it to be nicknamed for him.
Yes.
He doesn't want it to be called Trump Care.
Well,
he's
Obama
avoiding
didn't
that.
Want it to be called Obamacare until 2 years later when he embraced it.
I think he was okay with it.
He might have been okay.
I think he was okay
In the privacy of his own room, he might have been okay with it.
Yeah.
But he didn't say that out loud for a while.
Yeah. Well, it would have been better for everybody if that never happened,
yeah.
To be honest. But I really believe that what's going to happen, there's a representative from Kentucky, a House member, was against this bill. He doesn't think it's conservative enough.
Right.
So it's not, you know, it's not pulling the rug out from under quite enough
this
people.
This is actually a really good illustration of political parties in general, because about political parties as these sort of monolithic behemoths,
yes,
but in reality,
all politics is local.
I should not say that I feel sorry for Paul Ryan, but I do on a daily basis, and is trying to get this thing passed. And you've got people who are moderate who are opposed to it because it doesn't do enough, and you got people on the right and the Freedom Caucus who are opposed to it because it does too much. And you move in one direction and you anger more people on the other side, and there's
not even satisfying everyone as someone who is hurting cats.
Yeah.
You know, he can't.
Well,
cats are easier to manage
than Republican Congress.
I mean, you open a can of tuna fish, you're going to get a lot of cats
Congress members
following
just in general.
You.
Right, exactly.
Right. But he doesn't have a can of tuna fish to bring these guys together.
Yeah.
He doesn't.
No.
So
no tuna fish in the world will bring these guys together.
And it's very important for people to remember that, or if you're too young to remember, to know that Newt Gingrich became Speaker of the House in the Republican Revolution in 94. Mm-hmm. Because he put out the Contract for America. He said, this is what we're about. This is what we're going to do. Everybody follow me. And the people who did got elected and swept into office.
Yep.
And he was their leader.
Yep.
This is nothing at all like how Paul Ryan, of course, became Speaker, or how John Boehner became Speaker and then became retired.
Yep. And even Newt Gingrich in 1994, he sweeps into the Speaker's seat with a Contract with America, and what was it, a 10-point platform,
right,
of which how many actually got through the House?
Well, a lot of it became at least on the table. There was a lot of talk about balancing
the
budget.
Yes.
He had the president's help
in getting that accomplished.
Yep. They did
term
balance
limits,
the budget.
Nothing came of term limits.
They wanted to do a line item veto. That's, of course, unconstitutional. I don't know if that was in the Contract for America or not.
I think that might have been.
It might have been. But it was all about fiscal responsibility. Mm-hmm. Eliminating the deficit,
yeah,
and it was a lot about money.
Yep.
And they did get those things done. It was also about American values,
yeah,
and values, and then the lying, cheating, stealing. You know, Newt Gingrich got himself run out of the speakership and out of the House altogether, along with Bob Livingston right behind him.
Good old Bob Livingston.
And Mr. Livingston, I presume. And
briefly honest person in the entire Clinton impeachment scandal, honest just long enough to admit, yeah, I probably should resign, and I shall.
Yeah. And so bye now. Yeah. So
yeah,
see you later. Bye. The screen door hit me right where I live. Well, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about. We're going to sort all this out and figure out the entire power structure of the United States Congress.
Oh, good. We're going to do that in the next segment? Okay, good.
We'll do that in the next 10 minutes of the program. And then I don't know what we're going to do with the rest of the show, because once we've figured that out, it seems to me that everything in the world just falls into place. It's pretty obvious. I mean, I hate to point that out, but... So you're listening to The Weekend. Thank goodness you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler. I'm Jean Bolduc. With me is Aaron Keck. And you're listening, thank goodness, to 97.9 FM WCHL. Please don't go away. We'll be right back. We're back, and now we have to just recreate what we were talking about during the break. I'm not sure I understand why I interrupt at all with our timer here in the studio. Talking here with Aaron Keck, and we're talking about politics and history, mm-hmm. too. We were talking. Let me rewind. We were talking about
CPAC is where we started.
Well, actually, I mean, we were also talking about going all the way back to how the Nixon administration ended.
Oh, yes.
Which was with none other than
Barry Goldwater.
Barry Goldwater marching his way up Constitution Avenue up to the White House and informing the President of the United States, not just saying to him, I think you should quit. This was in early August, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it was either late July or early August. It was a matter of only a very few days between that visit and Nixon's resignation.
Because there were ongoing impeachment proceedings, and the question is, did he have enough support from his own party in the Senate to sustain a vote? And it was clear after everything that had gone down that it wasn't even close.
And once,
he had maybe 11 or 12, which is really interesting to think about, that Nixon did still have a not insignificant percentage of supporters from his own party, even after everything that had been revealed.
And what happened to all of them in the 74 and 76 elections?
I bet they were all gone
after that.
They
were vanquished from American politics, I would
briefly
think.
Yeah.
Well, we would hope so. But he came up to the White House, Barry Goldwater, and led a delegation of Republicans. And they came to inform the president that the articles of impeachment, which had been introduced, I think, were going to pass. And more importantly, that there were more than sufficient votes in the Senate to remove him from office, and that for the sake of the country, he should resign.
Because they were definitely going to pass the House for the same reason that the impeachment articles passed the House in 1998, which is that the House, I think, at the time was majority Democratic. So they were going to pass regardless. It was a question of, did you have the 2/3 vote in the Senate?
Right.
And
it's probably worth noting that that in this process, an impeachment is the equivalent in this process of an indictment. It's an accusation. Mm-hmm. It's not a finding in any way.
Yep.
And then there's a trial in the Senate. So that what the House's obligation here is to make a decision about whether or not there's probable cause to conduct a trial and have the Congress, in this case the Senate, be finders of fact as to whether or not the president's broken the law and should be removed from office as a result. It's more than a speeding ticket, obviously, but whether incidentally, I say this to all my friends and family probably now about once a day or once a week at least. To realize that impeachment and removal is a political process, not a legal one. So it doesn't mean so for example, the term of art is high crimes and misdemeanors. That is defined as whatever the Congress says it is.
Yep.
And that really could be a parking ticket. And you know, in Bill Clinton's case, it was a lie that was not a substantive lie that was told during a deposition about a private matter, and the Congress, in its indignant mood, thought that
you're looking
this
for
was
a replacement for infinite wisdom. There?
Infinite wisdom. That's exactly right. Determined that this was enough to send the country off into a ditch, never to be retrieved. And that they should conduct a trial over this horrendous conduct on his part of lying during a deposition.
It is important that it is a purely political process. I mean, high crimes and misdemeanors is undefined. Even the modifier high, that doesn't necessarily refer to a misdemeanor. It's not a high misdemeanor. It's just a misdemeanor and a high crime. So a parking ticket could be it.
It really could be something that is something that is technically criminal, large and small. He could shoplift a Snickers bar and get impeached and removed for it if the Congress says so.
Yeah, and which is just a fascinating thing.
It really is, and this has been in place for a very long time, and the country has been running well on it, and it's more likely, at least in my opinion, that the 25th Amendment would be activated here.
Yes.
And that Trump would be removed by that mechanism, which only requires that the vice president ask, I don't even think it has to be the vice president, but I think it has to be the vice president, ask the cabinet, and if he gets a majority vote from the cabinet, that the president is unable to fulfill his responsibilities, and they make that vote, and they sign, then he's out, and he can appeal that to the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be extremely unlikely to go anywhere.
Right. I think if something like that were to happen, I think just for the survival of the institution, if I were now a Democrat in Congress and Mike Pence comes to me and says, I've got signatures from Tillerson and everyone else, I would support Trump in that case to protect the dignity of the office. And I would hope that every other Democrat goes along with that as well.
Why?
Because that sets a terrible precedent. That sets a terrible precedent. If you've got a president who is not, in fact, clearly incapacitated and the vice president pulls something like that, you would have to support the president in that
case.
Well,
let's make an assumption. So Mike Pence, I know you listen to the weekend water cooler here at WCHL. I know you do, Mike. Everybody knows you do.
Yeah.
So if you do, Mike, what I'm going to say is that this should be written up as a resolution, whereas. You need to put your case in writing
mm-hmm.
about why you're removing the president. So, you know, if there's something like, I don't think it should be minor or trivial or just that he's making everybody mad or anything like that.
I feel like your next word is but.
But uh-huh. I do think that there can reach a point of the totality and the sheer weight of the fact that the president of the United States, and Donald, I know you listen to the weekend water cooler also, that the president of the United States has exactly no credibility at all on any topic and is a pathological liar. You know, we've just this week had this incident in London. And we don't know what the president could say about this incident from a national security perspective, strictly speaking, that would have any credibility with the American people, that would give anybody any reassurance that he's you know, keeping an eye on this and that, you know, everybody's, you know, at their station and ready to act if a similar plot were to come forward in the United States. I have no confidence in him at all.
I'm going to play two cards. The constitutional checks and balances separation of powers card and say
okay.
that the impeachment power is in the hands of the legislature for a specific reason and it should stay there.
Okay.
And any attempt to remove the president from within the executive branch should
come forward by way of a trial. There should be a trial.
There should be a procedure. It shouldn't just
okay.
be a piece of paper circulating around. So that's thing number one. And I'm going to play the political card on you and say that a week ago I went to the Carolina Theater to see John Waters, This Filthy World. And I mentioned this. He's great, right?
I
mentioned this because one of the points that he kept driving home every time he returned to politics was, y'all know Mike Pence is worse, right?
Well, here's the other piece of it. I guess I'm arguing that's a more likely scenario just because I think it's more likely to happen,
mm-hmm.
not that it's what I would prefer happen.
Yeah.
What I think is appropriate to have happen, just based on what I know from public sources, is that they should both be impeached and removed, because I think that the actions of the Russian government and Russian interests, and we can talk about this in much more depth after the break.
Mm-hmm.
I think history is going to tell us, and I think the FBI is going to tell us pretty soon that these actions bring forth an election process that was not legitimate. And they were both elected by that process.
Yeah. And I think it's important to keep in mind, and this is really the one thing I'll say on this, because people respond to that with, oh, but whatever Russian meddling, there's no evidence that affected the outcome of
well,
the election.
Well, that's not true anymore.
And it may well be true because, you know, we don't necessarily know why people went and voted for who they did. It was close, but whatever. go back to – we started this conversation with Nixon and Watergate. There is – not only is there no evidence, but no one at any point in 40 years has said or alleged that that break-in at the DNC in 1972 had any impact whatsoever on the outcome of the election. That was a landslide that Richard Nixon won,
right.
And he was going to win that
election regardless of what happened at the DNC. Right.
But the fact that it happened, it was illegal activity to give one party an unfair advantage in the election, and it got covered up, that alone made it an impeachable offense, regardless of whether or not it turned the tide in 1972. Same thing here.
Obstruction of justice is a crime.
Same exact thing here. If it comes out that there was illegal activity, that Trump knew about it, colluded in it, whatever, regardless of whether he would have won or not won with
not
or without,
the issue.
That's not an issue
exactly
at all.
Right.
That's a red herring.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
That is not the issue. It is the collusion and arguably talk about your high crimes. Oh, my goodness. That's a pretty high crime. And, you know, they weren't high either. I'll just speculate.
That would explain the hair, though.
That would explain the hair.
Oh, man.
How do you look in the mirror and say, I look good today? Well,
I will say it can't possibly be a wig, because if it were a wig, it would
not.
Look better.
Oh, it's not. Well, yeah. We'll come back and talk about Donald Trump's hair in just a minute. Stick with us here. Get it? That's an Aquanet joke. Stick with us here at 97.9.
That's an Aquanet joke?
WCHL, we'll be right back.
That's an A to D connection right there.
We'll be right back, I swear. Okay, so we're back with Aaron Keck. We're talking about all these happy events in Washington and whatnot, and the future of the presidency. And I'm going to say, as Doonesbury famously said, or was it Zonker, I guess, and Doonesbury just said, running with the newspaper headline in his hand, guilty, guilty, guilty. And this was that comic strip, it seems to me, was mainly about Nixon, but I speak today of our brothers and sisters in the news media. This time last year began a long, harrowing, awful period in which, if you put on the television, you were putting on Donald Trump standing before you in his dark jacket, white shirt, red tie, his uniform of the dictator.
Wait, that didn't start until this time last year?
Well, it might have been before.
It's been going on for like 2.5 years.
It's probably since he announced in July 2015, I guess. So it's almost 2 years.
We're closing in on 2 years.
No wonder everybody's exhausted.
Yeah, right.
And making the same
speech. Just had the anniversary of House Bill 2. We're going to have the anniversary of Nixon, Trump running for.
Yeah, see? Oh, there was a nice slip.
That was a nice slip. Yeah, that was unintentional.
Dr. Freud, your lunch is ready. So, you know, the networks, the cable outlets especially, were just day after day after day went live with every Trump rally. You know, you could plug in the same words every single time. And it's just a hell of a shame, I'll say, that they were doing that, which was a ratings grab. And, you know, should you have cameras there? Of course. Should they have just captured it and run it if something happened, you know, if the man bites dog. That's what they should have done.
I don't necessarily think they needed to have cameras there. I mean,
you got to cover it.
I guess. The reason you have to cover it, and we have a tendency to point the finger at, in general, we have a tendency to point the finger at other people whenever anything goes wrong, because very, very few of us are willing to look in the mirror and examine ourselves. The media has a lot of answering and owning up to do.
Right.
This is also on the consumers of the media.
Yeah, nobody changed the station.
And in fact, they did change the station. They changed it to the news outlets when Donald Trump was on.
Where is it on live?
You look at any media outlet now is a business that seeks ratings, page views, sales, and everything else, which means that they are going to pursue the stories that get the page views. They're right. going to tell their customers what they want to hear.
That's
and
right.
we know exactly what customers want to hear.
They tell us.
Because they tell us through ratings, which can be monitored right. now on a second-by-second basis.
Right.
I know like our website is chapelboro.com.
Well, I mean, with social media, too.
And with social media, we know it yeah. gets retweets and everything else. On chapelboro.com, there's a back page where we can go and see which stories get the right. most page views. And if you're listening out there and you're wondering, it's a fun list. It's whenever there is local crime, local drug busts, anything about HB2, the teacher pay at the
right.
General Assembly. When it's
right.
the General Assembly, it's HB2 and teacher pay, UNC basketball and UNC athletic academic Weinstein reporty scandal
oh, right,
news.
Right,
those
right.
are the stories that get the most views on chapelboro.com.
And when you have one story that has all of those things
exactly,
in it, that's a heck of a story.
Yeah. So when there's a new development on HB2, even if it's something that we know isn't going to go anywhere, like
right.
some state legislature files a bill like Joel Ford in Charlotte did this week, another bill that would repeal HB2 but then impose a cooling off period. And he's
right.
a Democrat and he's the only sponsor and you know it's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
But we covered it because we know that's what our listeners want. It's exactly the same thing on the national level. Why did the media focus so heavily on Donald Trump? Because that's what got them ratings. Why did CNN start turning more and more anti-Trump over the course of the election, because that sort of back and forth conflict increased CNN's ratings.
And the more Donald Trump insults CNN, the more their ratings
go up.
You know, Maureen Dowd wrote a wonderful column about this, saying, "Thank you, Donald Trump, for saving journalism." It's basically what she was
yeah.
saying, because she said, "You know, every time you say that the New York Times is failing." Our mm-hmm. subscriptions go up.
Yep.
The clicks go up on the website, you know,
Fox
and so
News
on.
Was really fascinating during the election. If you actually followed, I don't watch the shows, but I'll sometimes go to the websites. And Fox News, throughout the entire campaign, was very anti-Clinton and surprisingly objective and neutral about Donald Trump. There was positive and negative coverage. And that's because that's what their listeners were. They were all conservatives, anti-Clinton, but up in the air about Donald
Trump.
They
were reflecting
their
audience.
Yeah, right. they were reflecting their audience. So if you are upset about the media's coverage of X issue, whatever the issue is, look in a mirror and ask yourself, what stories have I been clicking on?
What are you paying attention to?
Yep.
And what are you expressing yourself about
yeah.
for your favorite news outlet?
Every time
to know.
You click on a story, that gets a check mark, and
right.
editors and journalists will look at that and take lessons from take direction from that as to what to cover.
Well, and you know,
that's me pointing the finger back. By
no,
the way.
That's I agree. I can't disagree with anything
yeah.
you're saying. I have to point out this wonderful turn of events this week,
mm-hmm.
which is that if you have been following the story of the president's assertion that President Obama wiretapped him, and you saw Mr. Comey under the penalty of perjury, you know, under oath. Saying to the Congress, no, there's nothing to that. I mean, use more words, but effectively said that,
mm-hmm.
refuted that, made a point of pointing out that he was not only representing the FBI, but also the Justice Department, and describing an ongoing criminal investigation about the collusion question
mm-hmm.
with the Russians and so forth. And the president says, oh, well, you know, he was only... in his press conference with Angela Merkel, says that he was only repeating what had been said on Fox News by Judge Napolitano.
Yeah.
And to me, the other shoe dropped when Fox News
dropped Napolitano.
Judge Napolitano.
Yep.
You know what? When Walter Cronkite finally came out and made an editorial statement and said that, you know, the Vietnam War, this is not the right war. This is just not what America should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
That is what caused Lyndon Johnson, by most reporting, to decide that he should not seek re-election in 1968 because he felt that if he had lost Walter Cronkite,
there was
he
no
didn't
chance.
Have a base
yeah.
anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that somebody clobbers Donald Trump with a history book to show him that, because I really think that might be an underappreciated, emphatic statement by Fox News that they might like to grow up into a real news division.
And we've seen it
from Fox. They were forceful this week.
On a regular basis, actually. I mean, we talk about the commentators, the O'Reillys and the Hannitys and everything else, but you actually pay attention to the anchors, Chris Wallace, Shepard Smith. Megyn Kelly's not there anymore, but Megyn Kelly.
Right.
They have been...
Brett Baer. Both of them came out forcefully.
Often very strongly against some of these ridiculous assertions.
Absolutely
because
right.
Because they've got integrity. Chris Wallace has integrity. Shep Smith has integrity.
And I mean, I think that they've been treading water for a while, but now they've decided to stake out their claim.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the departure of Roger Ailes has given them a lot more elbow room to say, okay, how about we try a news operation, you know, just for the hell of it?
Yeah.
And I think they're getting somewhere. I'm very encouraged by Fox. I might, you know, I watch it at the Sportsplex. I don't have much, don't have a lot of choice. So we're going to come back. When we come back, let's talk about this wonderful document I have in front of me, Indivisible, A Practical Guide for Resisting the Trump Agenda. This is a great document we're going to tell you all about when we come back. You're listening to the Weekend Water Cooler here at 97.9 FM WCHL. We'll be right back. And we're back in our closing segment. I can't believe how fast these hours go by, Aaron Keck. So let's talk about Indivisible, but first I want you to tell me your thoughts about Neil Gorsuch.
Neil Gorsuch making his way through the Senate confirmation process right now for Supreme Court. There's a lot that we could say about Neil Gorsuch, but one thing that I want to mention, and it's this debate over his position on the Chevron defense.
Yeah.
Which is the Chevron defense is a reference to a Supreme Court case from the 1980s. It involved the Chevron company. And what it is how deferential should judges like the Supreme Court be when it comes to bureaucratic agencies interpreting the law. So if Congress passes a law and gives it over to a bureaucratic agency to enforce. In the case of the Chevron, the original Chevron case, it was the EPA, gives it over to a bureaucratic agency to enforce. The bureaucratic agency gets to interpret the law and enforce it how they see fit.
And they create regulations.
They create regulations and do everything else. And as long as If Congress makes it clear in the law, this is how the agency should act, X, Y, Z, then that's what the agency needs to do. And if they violate that, it's violating the letter of the law and you rein the agency in. But if Congress leaves it up to the agency to interpret it however they see fit, as long as the interpretation is reasonable, judges shouldn't be taking it on themselves to step in and overrule the agency and say, no, you can't do it like that. You have to do it like this.
Right.
Neil Gorsuch is opposed to the Chevron defense. He wants to assert the authority of judges to step in, overrule the agencies and impose their own views. And I mentioned that, and there's a lot of debate about that one way or the other.
Well, one piece of that argument, I just want to insert, one piece of that argument is that when, as agencies create regulations, that they bring in experts.
Yes.
And in oil, for example, oil and gas companies, you might have fracking experts and, you know, all manner
judges
of scientific
are not fracking
experts.
Exactly.
And so judges aren't going to hear all that input and that the agencies do get into the weeds about all that in order to create a workable regulation and a regulatory environment that's manageable and is reasonably expert in these areas, which require expertise.
And I mentioned that, too, because whenever we talk about the Supreme Court, we have this tendency to assume that liberal judges are activist judges who are getting their fingers in every pie and making laws and changing things left and right. And conservatives are the models of restraint who step back and don't get involved. To say
you crack me up.
The Chevron defense is something that should go away is for Neil Gorsuch to say that judges should be much more activist than they currently are. So with Neil Gorsuch, we're talking about a conservative activist judge, at least on this issue. And I think that's worth paying attention to. And the other fun thing about the Chevron thing is that the Chevron case is a case in which the Supreme Court upheld an EPA regulation from the Reagan era. So this was actually a conservative decision that Gorsuch is opposing in this case. But the person who headed up the EPA in the 1980s under Reagan was Ann Gorsuch.
Oh, my goodness.
Neil's mom.
His mom. His mom.
Isn't that great?
Take that, fun fact,
yeah.
America. Oh, my goodness.
This is a family squabble.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Family squabble. See,
I love it.
Did not have that last piece. I enjoy that entirely too much.
Yeah.
Oh, let's go to Thanksgiving at their house.
Ugh.
Who's bringing the stuffing?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to watch that with much more interest than I had before. Thank you for that, Aaron.
Yeah. Okay. Indivisible.
So, Indivisible. This is a wonderful document that was published in December of last year. It's called Indivisible, A Practical Guide for Resisting the Trump Agenda. This was written by, this is available online. Just Google the word Indivisible, like from the Pledge of Allegiance.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is, it was written by former congressional staffers who are going to tell you a lot of things, including some very specific and particular things about making signs when you go to rallies. When you do this, for example, they say, make sure there's something on both sides of the sign.
Yes.
So that your opponents cannot take a photo of you with the blank side of the sign and use Photoshop and put something that you didn't mean to have on there. But here are some of the interesting things that they say are extremely effective, and we have seen many of these in play in recent weeks and months. Town halls, boy, has that been effective. I mean, the Tea Party's tactics of 2010 have been flipped on the GOP and have been used to great effect.
For exactly the same reason. It's people upset about health care.
People have something and they don't want to have it taken away. That's right.
It's really
about
fascinating
what you
to
have.
Watch. Yeah.
And I have to say, you know, Ted Cruz, I give him a lot of credit. He said at the time, a couple of years ago, once the final stages of the ACA are deployed, it will be impossible to pull it back.
Mm-hmm.
And he was right about that. Non-town hall events. It says members of Congress love cutting ribbons and kissing babies. Don't let them get a photo op without questions about racism, authoritarianism, and corruption. District office sit-ins and meetings. If you don't want to just hightail it to Washington once a week, every member of Congress has an office.
North Carolina NAACP just this week went to all of the offices of the state legislature, state legislators in Raleigh.
Excellent.
Following up on their visits to the congressional offices
about a
month ago.
And just, you know, and then again, through social media, just report to the world if they wouldn't let you in or refuse to listen to you. And then, and this last one, I think, has been an enormous success, which is calling the office. You can email, and that's great, but when the phones won't stop ringing, and senators and members of and House representatives, they log every call.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this Republican member on television last night talking about how the president had come to his district in Kentucky that Rand Paul was against the bill, that's the current health care bill to repeal the ACA, and that he was against that bill also, that he didn't care that Donald Trump was for it because he had received 282 calls or some such number that told him not to vote for it.
Yeah.
And about four calls in favor of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, he may not be a genius, but he can count.
Yeah. And it's so important to keep in mind that this is always playing on the margins, because you've got, 230 or so Republicans in Congress, in the House of Representatives, for instance. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but say 230. You could flood every one of those 230 offices with calls, and you're not going to change the mind of 95% of them. But the 5% you do is going to be enough
to turn
a majority into a minority.
It's going to take only five Republican senators, to kill that bill. In the Senate, should it
even
get
without
there,
a filibuster?
Filibuster, just if you have five Republicans that won't vote for it, it will never come to the floor.
Yep.
You know, Mitch McConnell's a little bit too experienced to let a bill come to the floor and fail.
Right.
So he's just not going to let it. It's just going to die while it's over there. But this document gives you a lot of very practical suggestions. And this is from the perspective of staffers in these offices, and they know what penetrates mm-hmm. with their member of Congress and what they can just ignore. So they say, every member of Congress wants their constituents to think, my member of Congress cares about me, shares my values, and is working hard for me. So if you're writing letters and making calls and making claims toward your member of Congress, including senators, you just have to tell them that
yep.
they're not speaking for you when they're against this and that and the other. And I had one last.
That's the way to keep
thing.
The pressure on members of Congress and the House and Senate and also state legislators, and also to keep the movement going, because
right.
we're looking ahead at 2018, 2020
right.
and beyond.
And
too.
if you want, need phone numbers, you can go to www.callmycongress.com and you can find everyone's telephone numbers there easily. Aaron Keck, we are out of time. I can't believe it. Thank you so much for
Thank
joining
you.
Us
this
here
fun.
On the Water Cooler. This is fun. We'll see you next month and see what we've blown up in Washington between now and then. It's a figure of speech. It's a figure of speech. Have a great weekend, everyone. Go Tar Heels.